MK Crypto Diaries, a podcast where we are committed to bringing you news that matters. Whether you are simply crypto curious or completely coin-pilled, there will be something here for you in our series. Today is Thursday, the 13th October, 2022, and I am your host, Dr. Justine Sherry Herrera. Welcome. The last couple of years have been an absolute whirlwind in the crypto space. We've seen this space emerge from the ICO boom to crypto winter to the rise of stablecoins, which gave rise to the birth of decentralized finance, DeFi, which led to the rise of regulators and regulations, to the current second crypto winter. Stablecoins are now on the plate of every regulator worldwide. Today, we have here with us Robert Courtnage. Now, Robert is a true leading expert in the world of payments, specifically in the UK. His background includes working with and for Citibank, Locklord, Osborne & Clark, and Dentons. Robert is also an executive committee member of the Payment Association, which association is very influential and works closely with the FCA, which is the UK regulator, and UK Finance. Robert is also heading their UK governance team in relation to all things CBDCs, digital assets, and stablecoins. Robert, thank you very much for being here with us today. Now let's dive in to some questions. So, Robert, for the benefit of our audience, could you please explain what stablecoins are, what makes them stable?
Sure, Justine. And I think to properly answer that question, you really have to look at the whole scope of the sort of crypto asset world, where you have at the one end, the ones that we've all been talking about from day one, the Bitcoins, the Ethereum and the like, which are sort of in the crypto asset. People call them cryptocurrencies, and these are digital tokens that have a free-floating value, and they use cryptography, and the transactions are all recorded on digital ledgers. And their distributed ledger technology, or blockchain, is the backbone of these type of tokens. What happened after that was that the volatility and the extreme volatility in many cases in these, and the fact that the banking system wasn't really that happy with the way in which people were going in and out of Bitcoin. There was lots of questions about money laundering, about criminal activities, ransomware and the like, that people needed a way to move into something more stable, which is where the name suggests, without having to leave the world of assets sort of held on the distributed ledger technology or the blockchain. So come along Tether and a few others, and we saw the advent of stablecoins, which were pegged to a particular currency. There was no regulation, and still in most of the world, there is no regulation in relation to how these work and how they are funded. But the concept was that in some way or another, you peg them to a particular currency. There was also discussions, if you recall, in relation to Facebook's Diem, which was initially called Libra, which was looking at maybe a basket of currencies, but in the end went back to the US dollar, but then in the end collapsed altogether and never took off. But the majority of stablecoins are linked or pegged to a particular currency, majority to the US dollar. And the idea is that if you're in Bitcoin and it's moving the wrong way or away you too quickly that you want to get out of, you can move to a pegged token, which is a stablecoin, which will not have the volatility of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum. Now, they are typically aiming to keep their stability by a number of mechanisms. One is to ensure that they have sufficient funds held in a fiat currency to match the amount of tokens issued. But others have gone down the route of creating algorithms, which means that they have a formula that is set up to ensure that as people buy or sell that stable coin, it is re-pegged to the currency, the fiat currency that it's pegged to, each time there is a change in the market circumstances. And we saw that spectacularly, as you may remember, in the question of Terra and the spectacular collapse, which Dan will have a discussion about a bit later. But then finally, obviously stable coins, there is no real regulation at the moment, but there's a lot of discussion, as I'm sure we'll come on to. But then we have the ultimate stable coin, which is central bank basically digital currencies, or CBDCs as they're known. And the reason these are seen as the sort of ultimate in stable coins is that they are actually backed by funds in a central bank on a one-to-one basis with the denomination of the token. So their pegging cannot move because it is really a digital form of fiscal cash that we have today, in the same way as your pound notes, or they don't have such a thing anymore, your 10 pound notes say that they will be met by the Bank of England. Again, these CBDCs will be met by the central bank issuing them. So that's the sort of digital landscape. I hope that helps the listeners.
Yes, perfect. That's a good breakdown of sort of what a stable coin is and how it differs from Bitcoin, Ethereum, and the other sort of prominent coins. It's also helpful to perhaps define the difference between pegged and backed, I would say. So when we say, you know, that a stable coin is backed, we mean that for each dollar or euro equivalent, there needs to be a dollar, a unit sitting in a bank account or a cash equivalent somewhere. When it says pegged, it can sort of be pegged to that value, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to hold that amount of value. And we're sort of seeing a rise of, you know, private actors versus public actors. So where private actors are primarily dominated, are primarily dominating the space of stable coins. And this has caused public actors and governments to rise and create their own token due to the aspect of competition. And this is why we are seeing CBDC surface all around the world. To remain a bit more on topic in terms of stable coins, can you explain a bit what the UK approach is in regulating stable coins? I recently read that the UK is taking the stance of regulating stable coins and offering them similar protections to the protections that central banks offer commercial banks. Can you comment on that and elaborate?
Certainly. Well, the UK HM Treasury, HMT, basically had a discussion paper in 2021 about what their stablecoin sort of and CBDC regulation might look like. We as the Payments Association made some interesting comments back on that particular paper. And effectively, that paper was suggesting, where possible, where there are existing regulations in a country, especially in the UK, that can effectively deal with the underlying asset that is the token. So in relation to certain kinds of cryptocurrencies like the Bitcoin, Ethereum we were talking about, if they can be likened to some form of digital sort of fund, then the fund laws should apply to that. Equally, where the token looks like electronic money, then they're suggesting electronic money regulations would be a good place to start. Now, that was then. And since that time, we have seen a couple of regulations coming in the UK or being proposed, one of which came out of that, which was in relation to the promotion of crypto through marketing, etc. And the proposal was that it should follow the same regime as the promotion of financial instruments. So they felt that obviously in the normal way it shouldn't be misleading or disproportionate, etc. But equally it would have to be signed off by some kind of authorized agent in that space. For financial promotions, you need to get it signed off by a regulated entity. And they were suggesting a similar route for crypto assets. And this was because there had been a flood of advertisements on the London tube system, that's our underground, and on billboards, making ridiculous suggestions in relation to the sort of investment opportunities that were around in some of these tokens, and people had lost money as a result of it. And so they wanted to step up the ability to stop those kind of advertisement being published. The other thing the UK has done is it has put together a proposal in relation to a special administration regime in relation to, amongst other things, stablecoin issuers. Now, this follows the previous year's iteration of a special administration regime that was brought in for electronic money issuers, and the original special administration regime that was brought in for financial intermediaries following the collapse of the banks in 2008-09. Now, the concept here is that the regulator can step in the event that they see a stablecoin provider that is systemic collapsing for some reason or another, and they can step in early. And the idea behind it is that they can step in to stop it failing fully. They can take control, even if it isn't actually insolvent at the time. And the concept behind this is sensible, but the consultation is suggesting that this is a Bank of England activity, albeit it is then sort of paying lip service to the Financial Conduct Authority, the FCA, and saying that where consumers are at risk as a result of a collapse of a stablecoin, then the FCA should be consulted in that process to avoid as much as possible consumer damage. And this pretty much all came about as a result of the UST, the Terra collapse, where there was a $60 billion collapse of UST, which was effectively a token that was tagged or pegged rather to the US dollar, but it was done using algorithms, and it was using another token called a Luna that was attached to it in order to create the balance and to ensure it continued its peg. There was a run on that particular token, and because most of its backing was in other crypto assets, which were at that time in free fall as well, it meant they never had sufficient assets to back their fiat amount of the tokens issued. And there was a massive, massive collapse of that, which is well documented. And I think the idea behind the special administration regime in the UK here is very much to be able to step in advance of something like that happening, and manage the situation in a way that perhaps the collapse wouldn't have been so extreme. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure whether that helps, but hopefully that gives you a bit of background.
That's excellent. Actually, that's exactly what I was after in terms of what the UK approach is and the reasoning for the UK's approach. So I understand the approach in terms of creating the special administration regime due to linking past effects like the collapse of the banks and the 2008 crisis. And I understand that if a stablecoin is so big and it fails, that there might be an overflow effect onto traditional financial systems. Fair enough. But then from the other side of the coin, we sort of have to step back and think the reason why cryptocurrencies were created and the fundamentals of crypto is to get away from control, absolute control, government controls and domination from central banks. So, of course, I do understand that it is important to have a backup plan in terms of what will happen if there is a failure, who will bail them out, is there such a thing? But from the other side of the coin, it is also important to find a balance and make sure that sort of governments and central banks don't completely control and dominate the space and do allow for private actors to flourish in that way. It is, of course, a hard, if not impossible, thing to balance out in terms of competing interests and who's right and wrong. But excellent. That's exactly what I was after. And just another general related question in relation to stablecoins. Is the approach of the UK that in terms of stablecoins, we have e-money tokens, so such as USDC, USDT would qualify as e-money. Then we have security tokens. Then we have other altcoins, utility tokens. Is there a fourth kind of type of stablecoin definition? And on this, I will comment. So, for example, in MiCA, which is the new EU crypto directive coming into force, they differentiate between e-money tokens such as USDC, USDT, and asset reference tokens, which are basically, so asset reference tokens are stable coins, but which derive their stability not from one fiat currency, but they could be from a basket of fiat commodities, you know, various fiats like Libra. Is there such an approach in the UK or is it still being explored?
To be honest, it is still being explored. There hasn't been a lot of discussion. The concern associations like the Payments Association had in this area was that we seem to be deviating away from MiCA. Some of our definitions I do not tie up with the MiCA definitions, for example, on stablecoin. We are much more specific in that it's a linked token. There does seem to be a push towards linking a stablecoin with e-money regulation, and whilst I can see there are many similarities between electronic money and a stablecoin that is linked to a fiat currency, there are also many different players in the stablecoin stroke crypto arena than there are in the banking arena. Mm-hmm. And so if you think of electronic money, and the definition of electronic money is very much that it's issued on the receipt of funds, great, well, pretty much the same as a stablecoin on that basis. However, if you then flip it to the other side, it is then redeemable at par with someone other than the issuer. That's the sort of second half of the definition. And obviously, that is how electronic money works. It is issued, someone takes it, and then they spend it, and it's redeemed. Now, in a stablecoin world, we have a different environment. Obviously, you issue the stablecoin, but once it's issued, it pretty much then stays in circulation like pounds, coins, like 10-pound notes. So coins and notes in our system stay in circulation until the Bank of England pulls them out by some means or other. And stable coins are very much the same as that. So we do need to be looking differently at the stable coin regime as we would at electronic money. And we look at the other players. Again, if you look at electronic money, you have electronic money issuers, and you also have banks and other entities that are entitled to issue electronic money. And they issue them pretty much direct to the consumers, who then use them and spend them. And the purpose behind it was that this looks like a deposit that a bank would issue and receive. However, the regulation was set up in such a way to say that whilst it looks and it acts like a deposit for the purposes of all the banking acts, it will be deemed to be electronic money and outside the definition of deposit for banking. And that's how this whole regime set up. So to make it easier for the fintech players to come in and create new and exciting products. And that's pretty much doing its job well. However, if we look at the stablecoin environment, that is not the same at all. Stablecoins have been around a while before any regulations come in. They've developed their own characteristics. And there's been a lot of legal actions taken, especially in the US, in relation to trying to define what they are, how they fit within the current regime. And equally, there's some proposed new regulation in the US on stablecoins as well that is looking to work out how you can regulate this new area. So stablecoins have custodial providers that hold the custody of the asset, the stable assets. They have wallet providers that may be either custodial or regulated or unregulated. They also have the issuer, but the issuer may not be the person that mints that token. The minting company, could be like a set circle or someone like that. But it may actually then be issued by a third party. If you look at the circle model, it's very, very much that you deposit funds with a circle and then they allocate you your stable coins that you can then issue. So it's that isn't what electronic money is. And I think it's very important that when we come to the regulation of stable coins, that we look at all the players and work out what the different liabilities of each of the players are, how they should all be capitalized, and what the risk model is around them, so that we get it right. I think we need to try and harmonize. I mean, this is the Electronic Money Association, sorry, the Payments Association is very, very much into ensuring that we try and harmonize as much as possible with Europe and with other companies internationally and other countries, to ensure that we have a global level playing field. Having a regime that works in the UK but doesn't fit with other regimes makes it very difficult for these businesses to work internationally. And as we know, stable coins, crypto and CBDCs have to work internationally. There has to be interoperability, both in relation to the technology, but also in relation to the legislation and regulation behind them. And if we want to create a single world that these things work in, we need to try to harmonize on a global basis as far as possible, and not dig our own path, which may divert us from being part of that world.
Yes, I agree. And it's interesting on the sort of last point you touched upon, on the harmonization, because we're seeing all these jurisdictions and continents, you know, draft all these bills and directives, which are all different from each other. So how is it going to play out in the end? Can USDC be offered in Europe after MiCA? Can, you know, a GBP stablecoin be offered in Europe after MiCA, and vice versa? So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. Obviously, when it comes to, you know, the world of politics and supply of money, there's going to be a lot of competing interests. So that will be what will drive the end result at the end of the day. So lots of interesting things, and definitely lots more regulation due to certain elements, specifically a potential systematic financial risk. Okay, now perhaps we could, so we're nearing the end, and I'd just like to touch up a bit on CBDCs. So as we mentioned, CBDCs are central bank digital coins, so money issued by the central bank and not issued by private actors like stablecoins. I followed and read that you drafted or assisted drafted together with others a green paper. Could you comment on what the green paper was, the content of focus and the participants, and if anything resulted from the drafting of the green paper?
So the green paper was set up and drafted in consultation with Boston Consulting Group and Pay with Glass. And the concept behind it was really, many people had done white papers on CBDCs and particular use cases, but what we felt hadn't been done was to go in as an open book and do a green paper to say, well, this is what pretty much a CBDC will look like. This is how we expect it to work. But what are the potential use cases for it? How might it fit into the digital world that we're moving to? How might it interact with things like the metaverse, Web3? How will it work on a global basis? What are the sort of macroeconomic implications of bringing stable coins into this world, which are linked to a central bank and hence are sort of like central bank money, but in a digitalized token form? And so the green paper very much was a collaboration. There were over 10 companies involved in researching it, working together over a 3-month period, pulling it all together, and then Boston Consulting Group tidying it all up into a very nice document. It's downloadable from the Payments Association website, and both in an executive summary format of about 10 to 15 pages and a full format of around 90 pages. So it's a good read, and it basically sets out what we think the use cases might be. And what has happened since then is that there has been a number of participants from that green paper that have rejoined together to set up a effectively a financial a digital financial institution, a DFI, and they are looking to test out some of those pilots that were suggested as use cases within the green paper. And I think that's pretty much where this is going. If you look around the world, there are over 90 different central bank pilots out in the marketplace, central banks looking at this. There are a few that have actually developed their own CBDC, like the Seychelles with their sand token. But equally, there are many, many more out there that are piloting it. And we have, of course, the digital yuan out of China, where there are over 350 million users in that pilot alone. And we can see that there are many use cases being developed and tested across all those different pilots. And things like digital financial inclusion is a major a driver to a lot of these. And also the ability to do other things, like the ability to create helicopter money drops in natural disasters. We saw the benefits of the ability to send crypto during the beginning of the Ukraine crisis, when a lot of banks were having difficulty sending money into Ukraine. Crypto assets, obviously being peer-to-peer, were able to be moved very quickly into Ukraine and help out in that humanitarian crisis. On the more dangerous side, obviously, there has been an acceleration in Russia of the development of their digital currency following their removal from the SWIFT network as a result of their war against Ukraine. And we see how that was really useful. But if they'd had a digital currency, a digital ruble at the time, they may have been able to circumvent something like SWIFT and continue to trade. So we can see the pros and cons of central bank digital currencies. And the key there, I think, has got to be, again, how it's regulated and how we create a global harmonization and interoperability to make sure that any such tokens that are brought into play in the world work together in harmony, and we have similar laws that enable them to work.
No, excellent. And there's so much going on in terms of, exploration and testing and pilots, and that is where it's at, because the potential is huge in terms of design elements, infrastructure elements. You can have certain things like privacy, which can play a part. So we're seeing different models like token models versus account models, to offer users who have been demanding for some element of privacy over these years, some element of privacy, and beyond all the things that you've previously mentioned. Now, in terms of, stable coins versus CBDCs, do you think we will get to a place where we will have stable coins and CBDCs living in symbiosis?
I definitely think that is the natural way in which this will play out. If you look at a lot of the pilots, they are using stable coins to simulate what a CBDC may look like in practice, because obviously you can't have a CBDC until you pass laws to make a CBDC legal currency in a country. But you can test out stable coins that are very much similar in what they look like. And you have the whole advent of programmability, which we see at the Payments Association as being one of the real benefits of a CBDC or a stablecoin, the ability to program it to work in a certain way. Now, obviously, there has also been some questions, as you did raise, identity, etc. Civil liberty areas are questioning the use of a CBDC, especially in places like China, because it means that the central government and the central bank, if it's set up in a certain way, can program that money, and that money can be programmed to do different things. It could be programmed to monitor where it's being spent. It could be able to turn it on and off as a currency at any given time, which is quite scary. It
Very
could
much
limit
so.
its use. It could mean that if you had a UK pound denominated a CBDC and you went to use it outside the UK, it would basically burn itself as it left the territory. There are lots of
I agree. It's a dangerous tool as well.
it's a very good tool, and it's a very dangerous tool. And as I always say, with power comes the need for legislation or the rule of law to come in and protect the individual, because you can't just give all that power to a state and not fetter it in some way. So the rule of law, the ability to stop a government just turning off stablecoin, CBDCs, stopping them restricting their use, taking it away from people, etc. There needs to be proper sort of law and guidance and regulation in that space. And who should be brought in to deal with that? Is this a police matter? Is it a state matter? Is it a regulator matter, etc.? And so those things all need to be balanced. But at the same time, we need to be moving very quickly because, as we said, other countries like China are moving very fast in this space. And if they continue to move at the pace they're moving, we could find things like the US dollar as a default currency being disintermediated, as it's not being needed when you're using a CBDC to settle funds off an international transfer. So we need to move fast, but we need to move sensibly.
Yes, that's it. I mean, who's ahead of the race? It is a sort of competition of, currencies and jurisdictions. And I do believe that, certain aspects like political imbalance and a shift from USDT is USDT. USD is looming on the horizon. And it's a question of, is it too little too late, or, can we sort of rectify the situation and rectify the balance of power? Okay, perfect. Thank you so much for that insightful, valuable content and opinions and outline of what is going on in the world of stablecoins and CBDCs. Before I let you go, I would just like to end with a very quick round of I call bullshit. So I will basically read out an editor's pick of a statistic, and if you think it's true, just say I don't call bullshit, and if you think it's false, just reply with I call bullshit. So according to Chain Analysis, Vietnam and the Philippines are the first and second place in the Global Adoption Index Top 2022, surpassing Ukraine, which is in the third place. Do you call bullshit or not, Robert?
I don't call bullshit.
You don't call bullshit, so you think it's true.
I think it
Okay,
could well be
well, you
true.
are definitely right. So, despite the Russia-Ukraine war debacle that we are in, there is an extremely high adoption in emerging markets, so Asia, Africa, LATAM, and this is for reasons associated with remittance and needing something to hedge against their own currency and inflation in these times of great political uncertainty. So thank you very much for
My
joining us
pleasure.
today. It was a great pleasure having you with us. For the audience, if you would like to reach out to Robert, kindly check out our terminal at MK Crypto Diaries, and you will find out where to reach him. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you very much.